Good morning. This morning's reading comes from Psalm 105. We've got two different spots, but it's on page 484 of the Bible in the pew in front of you if you want to pull it out and turn and read along. We're starting with verses 1 to 11, and then we're going to switch over to verses 37 to 45. O give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of all his wonderful works. Glory in his holy name, let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength, seek his presence continually. Remember the wonderful works he has done, his miracles and the judgments he has uttered. O offspring of his servant Abraham, children of Jacob, his chosen ones. He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He is mindful of his covenant forever, of the word that he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant that he made with Abraham, his sworn promise to Isaac, which he confirmed to Jacob as a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you I will give the land of Canaan as your portion for an inheritance. Switching to verse 37. Then he brought Israel out with silver and gold, and there was no one among their tribes who stumbled. Egypt was glad when they departed, for dread of them had fallen upon it. He spread a cloud for a covering and fire to give light by night. They asked, and he brought quails and gave them food from heaven in abundance. He opened the rock, and water gushed out. It flowed through the desert like a river. For he remembered his holy promise, and Abraham his servant. So he brought his people out with joy, his chosen ones with singing. He gave them the lands of the nations, and they took possession of the wealth of the peoples, that they might keep his statutes and observe his laws. Praise the Lord.
Thanks, Arlene. Well, good morning, everyone. Great to see you all here today. Have you seen the movie Still Alice? It's a critically acclaimed movie starring Julianne Moore in the title role. The opening scene shows a family celebration. It's Alice's 50th birthday. She's a highly intelligent and articulate linguistics professor at the University of Columbia, living what appears to be a very successful life. Yet we don't need to travel too much further into the movie before we realise that something isn't quite right. One day, Alice is unable to remember a familiar word in a lecture. We witness her confusion and her embarrassment, struggles to find the sought-after term, and as she wrestles with the unexpected loss of ability to articulate a well-known concept in her professional life. Soon, Alice is unable to remember other words as well. She gets lost while out jogging in familiar. A visit to her doctor reveals a devastating diagnosis. Alice has an inherited form of early onset dementia. As the movie progresses, we witness the decline of Alice's memory as played out through a series of scenes. Each one of these scenes lays bare aspects in which Alice is unable to remember. Speech becomes harder, she becomes reliant upon those around her to achieve even the most basic of activities of daily living. She becomes distressed with confused thought, physical deterioration, fear, and ultimately complete dependence mark Alice's descent into advanced dementia. The final scene of the movie shows Alice sitting with her daughter. The loss of one of life's important capacities, the ability to remember, has left Alice truly bereft. A study from just a couple of years ago shows that the growth of the internet, 24-hour TV and mobile phones, means that we now receive 5 times as much information every day as what we did each day in 1986. And remembering all this information is just not possible, but thankfully we don't need to. After all, why would we want to memorise facts to do with geography or history or a recipe or a checklist when we can simply Google it? Scientists tell us that this pervasive and easy access to information isn't only changing what we remember, but how we remember it too. If we think we're going to be able to look something up, we're far less likely to commit it to memory. And so to today's reading, Psalm 105, where there's a lot of remembering going on. We haven't read the full psalm today, but this is a psalm which portrays a rich depiction of God's faithfulness to his people and his commitment to his covenant, as revealed through the story of the telling of the Exodus. But this is more than just an historic narrative. Psalm 105 is also a psalm of praise. In fact, its first 15 verses are taken directly from a larger psalm of praise, a song in actual fact, found in 1 Chronicles 16, 8:36. A song which David directed people of God, the Israelites, to sing on the occasion of bringing the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. Now, this was a pretty significant occasion in the life of Israel. Deuteronomy 10, verses 1 to 5, tells us that the Ark contained the text of God's covenant with his people. It was written down inside the Ark. When David succeeded Saul as king, he acted to return the Ark from its place of relative obscurity in Kirjath-Jearim, where it had been for the previous 20 years, to place it in a position of centrality in Jerusalem, not only physically, but in the life of the nation as well. This act really showed that David's reign as king was to be focused on seeking covenant relationship with God. Now, recently at Oak Tree, we've looked at a couple of other psalms, two other psalms that are based upon the same song of David. Mark spoke on Psalm 106 last month, and Andrew on Psalm 96 a few weeks back. By recognising the significance of this event, the Exodus, the psalmist shows that he understands that remembering God's covenant with Abraham forms the foundations for Israel's songs, praises, and their faith. In fact, the word remember, or a synonym of it, a word that has the same sense as remembers, is used 3 times in this psalm, in verses 5, 8, and 42, and a further 3 times in the next psalm, 106, which we heard about last month. So the concept of remembering was obviously a really important one to the psalmist. He gives it great emphasis. And then in verse 5 he says, remember the wonderful works he has done, his miracles and the judgments he's uttered. The psalmist then proceeds to take us on a bit of a trip down memory lane. And who doesn't enjoy a good reminisce? I've just been on a bit of a journey down memory lane myself. I went on a road trip around Tassie with my parents. We spent time visiting family and going to places we'd spent time as when I was a child on holidays. And for Mum and Dad, this was a really strong time of remembering. See, my dad was born in Tassie and he and Mum have spent quite a lot of time there over the years. So as we drove around, there was constant references made to remembering the past. And these memories were often sparked by arriving in a specific place or location. When we reached a familiar area, Dad would start. "That paddock over there, that's the one that we used to climb Mount Roland from. We rode our bikes out here and we had a great time climbing up. This beach here, this beach was the one that I came to for my first Sunday school picnic. We all caught the train out together from Burnie." And then Mum would chime in. "I remember having dinner here with Shirley. I think that was the last time we saw her, wasn't it?" For my parents, thinking about a location was a powerful motivator for recalling other memories. And it was the same for God's people too. The psalmist employs the same location event memory link here in Psalm 105 as he encourages the people to remember by recounting the experiences in Egypt and the exodus from that land. We read how, with God's help, they overcame the most powerful nation on earth at that time, that their leader was Moses, and that he led them out of Egypt, that they were sustained and provided for by God during their time living in the harsh desert for 40 years, and finally, that they entered into the land of Canaan. But this psalm isn't just about people remembering. Verses 8 to 11 tell us that God also remembers, that he remembers the covenant he made with Abraham, verse 9, and that he remembers his promise of giving the land as a sign of that covenant, verse 11. The rest of the psalm then goes on to show how all this remembering is outworked by demonstrating God's faithfulness to his people. We're told in verse 44 that he does indeed keep his promise and his covenant with Abraham, which he made in Genesis 17, verse 8. The evidence of this? The people are sustained for 40 years and they enter into the promised land. We also can be reassured that God is a promise keeper and that nothing will cancel out his covenant. Vivian Bullwinkle was an army nurse during the Second World War and she was stationed in Malaya. As the Japanese troops made their way towards that area where she and other nurses were working, they were evacuated on a ship bound for Singapore. But they never made it. 2 days after setting out, their boat was struck by a torpedo and it sank. Vivian and her fellow nurses spent many hours adrift at sea before they washed ashore on Bunker Island, which is in modern-day Indonesia. There they encountered Japanese soldiers who motioned for them to walk back into the water. Vivian was struck by a bullet. It passed through her body, missing vital organs. She feigned death then until the soldiers left. She was the only nurse to survive. After making her way to shore, she encountered an injured British soldier and they hid together in the jungle for 12 days, but it soon became apparent to Vivian that if they were to have any hope of surviving, they'd have to surrender to the Japanese. She was then placed into a concentration camp for the remaining 3.5 years of the war, where she, along with the other women who were interred there, suffered great hardship. Part of the story of that camp was later told in the Hollywood movie Paradise Road. During that time, Vivian didn't speak about what happened on Bunker Island, but her memory didn't dim. When the camp was liberated in 1945, Vivian snatched the first opportunity she could to tell her story to the world audience. She said that it was only by the grace of God that she had survived, that someone had to survive to remember and tell the story of Bunker Island. Vivian's recognition of remembering and telling as being important not only revealed an atrocity, it also brought to light her own incredible survival story, a story that was reported widely in the media throughout Australia at that time, and a story which most people knew at that time as well. But with the passage of the years and an absence of people to retell it, Vivian and the other nurses' stories is now not widely known. It's mostly passed into the annals of history, an important past event only remembered now by a few. If a story isn't told and told regularly, it gets lost. God's people have recognized this throughout history. The Jewish people have a rich oral tradition of passing on the stories of God's wonderful deeds. If you've ever had the opportunity to attend the Passover Seder on the Thursday before Easter here in the Oak Tree Hall, you'll have some understanding of what I'm talking about. In fact, the Passover story, as handed down through the generations, is part of the wider Exodus story, which is recounted and retold in our psalm today. Did you know that the Exodus story is such an important and foundational event in the history of Israel that it is told more than 120 times outside of the book of Exodus in the Old Testament? We can find it referred to in stories, psalms, prophecies, poems, and historical writings. And it's also referred to often in the New Testament as well. It's a very important part of the history of God's people. Verses 1 and 2 of today's psalm tell us, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him, sing praise to him, tell of his wonderful works." But as 21st century Christians, should we still be remembering and telling the story of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt and how they entered the promised land? Well, yes, I believe we should. But we should be remembering and telling so much more than that. You see, the story of the Exodus is just one part of the covenant story between God and his people. The story continues with the coming of Jesus, who is the fulfillment of the covenant. As people who believe in Jesus, we're now part of God's covenant people too. And as his covenant people, we should be telling all about the wonderful works that Jesus has done. The character of God is revealed through Jesus and through the stories of his interventions and actions in the lives of his people. We are the evidence of God's faithfulness and his covenant promise. Now, I was doing a Google search the other day and I came across a YouTube video that reminded me that I don't tell stories of the wonderful works that Jesus has done nearly often enough. As I searched, I found a video of a young woman with a disability, one of the many disabled outcasts of Nepali society. She was being helped by the mission organisation I worked with when I was in Nepal, and I recognised her instantly. Her name is Putali. I met her many years beforehand at Green Pastures Hospital. In the video, Putali's withered leg had been removed and a new leg was fashioned from simple materials, wood and a moulded plastic drain pipe using an innovative design. And I began to remember all the people who'd been quite amazingly and often ingeniously given back mobility by the gifts of creativity and love for outcasts that Jesus had given to the hospital staff there. Then I remembered a young man named Suresh, a 19-year-old from a background of extreme poverty, a Hindu from an untouchable caste. He attended one of our cliff leap and palate surgical camps in the west of Nepal after trekking over the border from India, accompanied by his brother. And he was utterly terrified. His eyes were downcast, and all I could see in them was fear. Suresh had a cleft lip, a deformity of his upper lip that he was born with, and that affected his speech and his ability to eat. But more importantly for Suresh, it affected his appearance and his self-esteem. His whole life he'd been called names, ugly, hideous, monster, gross, and it existed on the fringes of society. The gaping space in his face where his upper lip should have been provided a clear view into his nasal and oral cavities where crooked, stained teeth jutted out. And unfortunately for him as a young man, the stubbly facial hair which he had only served to emphasise the appearance of this gaping hole further. If Suresh had been born in Australia, his cleft lip would have been repaired when he was a baby. But in India, he'd survived for 19 years like this. We saw him a team in the ward prior to his operation, and privacy isn't a strong concept in Nepal, so most people in and from around the hospital area had already been to see him and to stare at him and the other kids who were lined up for surgery for their cleft lips and palates. When the time came for Suresh to go into the operating room, he nearly crushed my hand. He held it so tightly. As we did with all patients, we prayed with him before we began. Now, this surgery was relatively short, 15, 20 minutes maximum, and it was completed under a local anaesthetic. The surgeon was used to repairing this type of deformity. He did a bit of cutting and a bit of pulling, and then he sutured the whole thing into place with a thread going continuously under the skin. Now, surgery, of course, is a bit traumatic, and it naturally results in quite a few days of bruising and swelling, and sometimes some bleeding from the wound. Suresh was one of the last people we operated on that day, and we returned him to the ward about 10 o'clock that night. Bright and early, 6 o'clock the next morning, we went back to the ward to check on all the patients from the previous day. And as we walked through the door, we realised that there was quite a crowd and commotion around Suresh's bed. We walked past the other patients with their swollen faces and obvious wounds and went straight to Suresh. There he sat, surrounded by a crowd. And his face was perfect. It was as if he'd never had a cleft lip, and any sign of surgery was but the slightest hint of a line running from his lip to his nose. And the people were amazed, and might say we as the team were also pretty amazed too. Suresh's mouth, which had been so distorted less than 10 hours beforehand, was now turned up in a smile that went from ear to ear. But his eyes were the thing that struck me most. No longer downcast, they now shone with confidence as he looked directly into my eyes, beaming. All fear was gone. That day, Jesus worked quite miraculously in Suresh's life to restore his faith and his self-esteem. I don't know how much Jesus also touched his heart. Suresh was discharged before we got out of surgery that day. But I do pray that this encounter with physical and emotional healing also introduced him to the Jesus who saves. We can read in Matthew chapter 15 that Jesus was surrounded by a crowd of probably mostly non-Jewish people who placed before him the blind, the mute, the disabled. Jesus healed them. And we can read in verse 31, the crowd was amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the maimed whole, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. And they praised the God of Israel. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of his wonderful works. Let's not be like Alice, forgetting the important things of life. As Jesus works in us individually and within our community here at Oak Tree, let us remember his deeds and tell of all the wonderful things that Jesus does. His goodness and his glory is revealed through the stories of his people, and all will be amazed and give praise to his name. Let's pray. Father God, we praise you and we give you thanks for all your wonderful works in our own lives and in the lives of your people.